Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is one of our favorites, if not our favorite, Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Welcome, Yancey. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Alan, how are you?
Yeah, you're doing all right. All right is okay, but it's not, I'm terrific, but we'll take it, whatever it is. Okay, Yancey. The New York legislature has introduced a bill to vote on an already recommended pay raise, and that's your column. Legislators currently earn $110,000 in annual salary, but a plan to raise it to 142 is expected to be voted on this week. Do they deserve it? And what about the discrepancies between upstate New York and the New York City area? $130,000 goes much further upstate, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. You know, let's take a look at the context here. What happened was, lawmakers way back when had granted them, so they have to vote on their own pay raise, and that's always a tricky thing. And they had last done that in 1998 to bump it up to $79,500
Seems like yesterday.
Plus, they get various stipends for leadership posts. But because of, I think, the sort of public pressure of voting on your own raise, they hadn't done anything for 20 years. So come around to 2018, then Governor Andrew Cuomo and the legislature came up with this compensation commission that would recommend salaries and then implement them. This sort of try to get them away from the sort of sticky situation of voting on their own pay raise, right? So what happened was the commission voted for raises for the governor and the legislature, saying they had gone almost 20 years without them. And then a couple of lawsuits came around to challenge basically two things. One was the overall legality of the commission. And second, one of the things that the commission proposed doing was, while giving you a salary hike, saying that there would be a cap on outside income that legislators could earn because all these years they've been considered part-time and they would be able to, you know, have a side business or be in a law firm or what have you. The bottom line is, after some wrangling, the court said that the commission itself was okay, but any kind of cap on pay would have to be implemented by the lawmakers themselves. So fast forward to December, they've decided, you know, we're now going to try to implement what the commission said, which was bump up the salaries and of the legislature and put a cap on it. So what they got before them and what they're looking at Thursday is a bill that would bump the salary from $110,000 all the way up to $142,000, which would make them the highest paid legislature in the country. And they would implement a cap on outside earnings at about $35,000, which is about 25% above your salary. Now, good government groups have raised some objections. One of them is that the cap should be lower. It should be about 15% rather than 25% above salary, which is what Congress has. They also say there should be an outright ban against any kind of outside job where you have a fiduciary responsibility to a client because it could be conflicts of interest. And also they say that the commission itself, the idea of a commission itself is not terrible, but compensation commission in the future should be truly independent and not made up of a bunch of political appointees. Now, Republicans have objected to the such a big pay hike, saying, you know, the economy has not really rebounded completely from the pandemic, and especially upstate, that's a lot of money, $142,000. One of the things to know, and one of the factors here in driving that salary stack figure, is that it's still, I think, a little bit less than what city council members get in New York City. So I think that's some of the consideration of how they ended up at that figure. But look, it's always a hard thing. It's always tricky politically because pay raises are never going to be popular with the public. And part of why you do them in December is because it's a long ways away from the next election day.
And Merry Christmas.
Yeah, that's right.
So one way or the other, call me Ishmael, call me anything. But the fact is, one way or another, they're going to get their pay raise.
It looks pretty much on track. They introduced the bill on Monday, which means it'll age 3 days and ready to vote for it on Thursday of this week.
So you just mentioned aging. I know that you can age a piece of meat, but...
Yeah, they've introduced it, and they'll vote on it 3 days later. One interesting thing here also is Governor Kathy Hochul, mm-hmm. has voiced support for the pay raise, and state legislators are working full time, and they haven't had it was frozen for so long. Now it's going to bump up. It already bumped up from 79 up to 110. Now it's going to go up to 140. But one thing left unsaid that we didn't get to was this compensation commission 4 years ago already had recommended salary increases for the governor, attorney general, controller, and all the agency commissioners. And all of those went through several years ago without a court challenge. So this commission, which was ostensibly there to raise the salaries of the executive and the legislative branch, the executive branch raises all went through. It was only the legislative part that got hung up by court challenges. And I think you see that's part of why the governor and the executive branch saying, yeah, the legislative branch should get a raise too now.
Well, unless you're pretty stupid and you're there's quid pro quo in all of this, obviously, people are trading, you would say, okay, what does it matter to me? Give them, the legislators, their raises. What's to stop that?
At this point, I don't think there's anything that's going to stop it. I mean, there'll be some public blowback and some criticism, but everything looks as though it's moving forward on the pay raise for this December.
So if you were running for office right now, and you wanted to make a little hay, this provides some fodder, doesn't it?
It will, but keep in mind, we're 2 years away, almost exactly 2 years, 23 months away from the next election day for the state legislature. That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
And there's a lot of issues that will probably come into play and be factors in that next legislative election, not the least of which is it will also occur during a presidential election cycle. It could be used in campaigns, but it's a long time away right now.
Yeah. So if you were running for political office right now, this is probably a good time to raise your pay because it is Christmas. It is the new year. People have short memories, right?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. The issue for me is whether or not legislators are properly paid. Now, I've worked on this for many, many years. I worked on it when I was at the Eagleton Institute of Politics, and this became the number one thing that legislators were interested in. But there's real danger here, isn't there, when you are a proponent of raising your own pay?
Yeah, it is. In some ways, who wouldn't want to be in that position? Hey, I'm going to decide my own salary. This goes back to one of the things that the watchdog groups, such as the New York Public Interest Research Group and Common Cause and others have said, is that, we're not saying that the salary should be 110 a year or 140. We don't know. But what we're saying is get a real independent commission that's not full of political appointees that decides what the appropriate salary is and comes to that through sort of independent investigation, and then, you know, maybe we could say that that's a good process. But right now, as it is in the Constitution, basically it's in the hands of the legislature and nobody else.
Meanwhile, there's a new Siena poll that finds New Yorkers believe Governor Hochul didn't make good on many 2022 goals. What do you make of that so soon after she was elected?
Well, I guess two things. I don't have any kind of historical context data in front of me, but I would venture to say that if you did that sort of poll every year, whether it's the governor of New York or the president, there'd be quite often you would find that the public didn't think that that chief executive did too well on his or her goals. So there's always like an element there of, you know, it either dissatisfaction or whatever you did is not quite enough. And I think that would hit the leader or the governor or president of any party. So there's a little bit of that. But then there's also, you know, her first year in office was a little bit of a, you know, try to break from Cuomo and keep things status quo and just kind of moving along through you get through the election. And she did win, although more narrow margin than expected. And I think that now she has a full term, I think there will be more expectation and on, you know, seeing Kathy Hochul put her own stamp on the office and put it in its own direction. I think there might even be more expectations now that she's got a full term.
I'm glad you mentioned Cuomo. The New York Post reported that former Governor Andrew Cuomo had dinner with Kellyanne Conway, of all people, former President Trump's top aide, where they apparently talked about politics and their mutual podcast. Do you think Cuomo is going to try to make a political comeback at some point? I can tell you this right now. I do.
You know, it's hard to say. I think that he started his own podcast in a way to try to get back in the conversation, get into the mix. Politics to show that he's not, you know, completely gone. I don't know. It's a little early for me to make any kind of prediction because he's just been out of office a year and a quarter, I guess. And as far as right now in New York, I don't think there's much talk of Andrew Cuomo and what his future might be. But again, we've got, you know, another cycle of elections coming in a couple of years. He's trying to kind of keep his name just in the conversation. I don't know if it's towards any sort of running again or anything at this point. But I think right now it's more or less to, again, show that, you know, don't forget me. You know, I'm still out here. I'm still doing things. I still have thoughts on, you know, issues and problems and what we should do. But beyond that, it's a little early to say where this might any of this lead for Andrew Cuomo.
Indeed. Okay, so now your paper, Newsday, tried to make sense of the 10 lawsuits filed against New York State's concealed carry weapons law. Can you bring us up to date on that?
Well, you know, this all started when the Supreme Court last summer, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down New York's concealed weapons law, which had been on the books for 100 years and had been one of the stricter ones in the country. The Supreme Court said that the standards for getting a license were too subjective, but the state could try again and put in more objective standards. So the Democratic-controlled legislature and Kathy Hochul did just that. Not only did they put a lot of conditions in, such as 18 hours of training before you could get a license, but they also threw into the law dozens and dozens of prohibited places where you could never carry a concealed weapon. This is, you know, places that serve alcohol and parks and government buildings, and the list goes on and on and on. Immediately, guns rights groups said that law was even more restrictive than the one that got struck down. So it sparked just a bevy of lawsuits, 10 and counting so far. Some have challenged the First Amendment, free speech. Some have challenged Second Amendment on the right to bear arms. Some have challenged equal protection under the 14th Amendment. Some have said it's too burdensome. There's a whole variety of breadth and lawsuits and arguments filed in Western New York, Northern New York, one on Long Island. It's all over the place. And, you know, folks have been seeing little incremental stories where one judge grants an injunction and then one level, and then the next few weeks later, the next court up puts a stay on it. So we tried to put together a chart of all the lawsuits There are 10 right now. They're in various stages. The bottom line, though, is that all the provisions of the concealed carry law that was passed last summer are still in place. Even when a judge has granted an injunction to say some of these can't be enforced, it's let's later been kind of taken over by a stay placed on it. So the key thing to watch is that there's going to be some lawsuits moving forward as we go into 2023. It'll probably be months down the road before we get any kind of real substantial ruling that kind of shows where this is going. But it just shows you the interest in the law and the interest in gun rights groups and sort of knocking holes into the law. It's going to be one of the big issues to follow in the courtroom in 2023.
Let's switch subjects. The deadline is approaching fast now for Governor Kathy Hochul to make her selection for the state's top judge. I guess the question here is, does the public really care? Do they watch it? Is this such a strategic thing that they're going to say, golly gee whiz, Martha, that was terrific or not?
You know, that's a good question because it draws – the New York top court is important. It does – decide a lot of important issues in the state, but it generates nowhere near the controversy of the U.S. Supreme Court, which is pretty obvious to say. You know, it's not dealing with sort of the fundamental big picture rights that we've seen recently in the federal courts, especially abortion. But the New York State Court of Appeals is pretty important, and the direction is important. The judge who recently retired is Janet DeFiore. She was a Cuomo appointee and a former prosecutor. And under her tenure in 6 years, the court definitely seemed to favor prosecutors a lot more than defendants, was one key issue there. And one other thing that they did was they just didn't hear a lot of cases. You have to ask the court for permission to argue your case, more or less. Mm-hmm. And the chief judge sets the tone on how many cases you're going to hear a year. And under DeFiore, that number dropped dramatically. So while it wasn't maybe a kitchen table topic, if you're folks who work on criminal law, whether you're a defense or a prosecutor, if you work on civil rights issues, these things were pretty important, and the court dramatically cut down on the number of cases it said, which basically means fewer people got their day in New York's highest court. So that brought a lot of criticism from the left, who are now really pushing Kathy Hochul in this new selection of a chief judge to pick someone a little bit more from the left side of the spectrum than DeFiore was, and definitely they don't want her to put another ex-prosecutor in the chair of chief judge. So it's going to be an important appointment for her, even if, as you said, it's not one that maybe, you know, drives conversation all across dinner tables in New York.
What is your crystal ball telling you?
Well, there's 7 judges on a list that were screened by a committee and forwarded to her. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, there's several choices that give her an opportunity to make history in that she could appoint the first African-American woman as a top judge as one of the nominees. She could appoint the first Hispanic as the chief judge. She could appoint the first Asian-American as the chief judge. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if that was part of the calculus in whatever the selection is. There's a chance to make history here. So, you know, who knows? You know, there's a lot of candidates with different profiles. She could select a person who was recently with the Legal Aid Society, which defends indigent clients. And putting that person as the chief judge would also be pretty groundbreaking. So I think that whoever she selects, look for, you know, that to be part of the equation and that to be part of the stories when the selection is made. There's be some sort of groundbreaking to be made with this selection.
We, of course, I want to remind you, if you've come in late, are talking to Yancey Roy, always a favorite here on our program because he knows so much. Okay, so Yancey, let's talk about New York City Mayor Eric Adams' plan to involuntarily remove people who are suffering from mental illness from the city streets. As you write, Yancey, Adams' plan for the mentally ill may prompt a push for more hospital beds What other concerns are being expressed over this plan?
Well, the chief issue here is about the ability of the state, the government, the city, to push people into treatment. And there are some groups, civil rights groups and others, who oppose
don't want to do that.
Idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they say, look, it's basically not quite incarceration, but it's sort of like you're pushing people into a confined space, a confined setting, and forcing them into this, and that's just, you know, blatant violation of civil rights. But there are laws on the books. Kendra's Law was one of the more high-profile ones passed 2 decades ago under then-Governor George Pataki, where you could invoke the law to force some mentally ill people to take treatment. And so there are laws on the books, and it looks as though Adams does have the legal authority to do this. But there's some issues there, which is state legislators who come to Albany and from all around the state agree that, you know, one of the issues is there's just not enough treatment facilities. There's not enough beds. There's not enough programs. And that if the city wants to tackle this, what has to happen as part of it is the state is going to have to act to expand resources to provide for people, because, you know, you don't just want to, the issue is not just move people off the streets, but okay, what do you do after that with folks? So,
well, Yancey Roy, you're the man on the scene. You know all about Long Island, and I want to talk to you about Long Island and gambling. There are operators now looking at Long Island sites, one of the world's largest gambling business. Las Vegas Sands Corporation is looking to build a casino on Long Island at the suggestion of its senior vice president, David A. Patterson, a former New York governor, who I have a picture of in my office with me. Do we need more casinos in New York, and do they have a site yet?
Well, the legislation that was approved several years ago authorizes 3 downstate casinos. They already had expanded upstate several years ago. Those casinos are, well, while doing okay, in large ways, never quite made some of the projections in terms of revenue for the state that some people thought. Now, the thing is with downstate casinos is there's such a huge population in and around the New York City metro area that some folks think that this will be a much more lucrative venture, not only for the casino companies, but also for the state that will get all the tax dollars. So there is a lot of interest in the 3 casino licenses. And we're talking at an important point here because come January 6th, the state will open the window for receiving what they're calling requests for proposals for a casino. So, and that window will be open for a while, but that will begin in January where you can submit, here's our proposal for expanding. One of them, will, you know, everyone's expecting is Yonkers Raceway, which is right now got video slots. Aqueduct will probably be a competitor. There's going to be interest in sites in Manhattan, I think. There's going to be some in Queens. There might be a bid to propose one on Coney Island. And there's also likely going to be a proposal for, as you mentioned, Long Island. Sands is interested in a couple of sites. One of them especially is the old Nassau Coliseum, which used to house the Islanders, the hockey team way back when. So I think what you're going to see in the next few months as we move into next year is just a flurry of proposals being put on the table and a lot of promises of how many jobs and how much tax revenue this will generate. And it's going to be a big issue to follow through 23. I don't think you'll see any kind of decisions, though, till the latter half of the year. But the first thing to see is just how many actual proposals. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, people proposing things. We'll see, you know, what they actually put down in paper and submit to the state pretty soon.
Got to go fast because we're running out of time. But I do want to ask you this. New York Attorney General Tish James is rejecting criticism that her office didn't take sexual harassment allegations against her longtime chief of staff seriously. The New York Times published a story quoting one of the women who accuses Ibrahim Khan of misconduct. Khan resigned after a decade when the claims, which were said to be credible, emerged. What do we know about all of this?
Well, some of the details are still emerging. And as you mentioned, there's been a a number of stories. The Times most recently had a former staffer accusing, saying the office should have done more about the former staffer because they knew about this behavior. It's part of the context here is that Attorney General Tish James was the person who spearheaded the report about allegations of Andrew Cuomo's alleged sexual harassment in a report that was filed last year, which eventually was a key reason of leading to Cuomo's resignation as governor. And so now folks are looking at James because, you know, her office has a staffer where, you know, there's also a sexual harassment allegation. Some of that's to be played out. It's a little bit different, though, in terms of like a staffer versus the governor of the state. And so I don't know. It's not an equal situation between the two, but it certainly created a lot of scrutiny about how Tish James is handling it within her own office.
We're out of time. Our guest has been Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, thanks so much for joining us. We so appreciate the fact that you come back and talk to us. It's really great.
Always a pleasure, Alan.
Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us online anytime at WAMC.org or just schedule a podcast anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. Thanks for listening.